I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. The message behind the Grief Gang is to normalise the topic of conversation that is grief. People living with grief can often feel ashamed, isolated and alone. This podcast was created to break those taboos after I, myself, experienced all of those feelings after the loss of my mum in 2016. I decided enough was enough and we need to talk about this. You'll hear on this podcast an array of stories and experiences, some being my own and some being fantastic guest episodes and their incredible stories. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but I hope above all, I hope you'll learn. I hope you'll learn that you are not alone in your grief journey, that you have a voice and it should be heard, that you and your grief matter. So without further ado, I'll let you enjoy the episode. Happy listening. Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. If you're watching, you'll see me be doing all these little hand movements. But welcome to this kind of impromptu, I'd say a bonus episode, kind of just came off the back of a conversation I've been having with my guest, who I'm going to intro in a second, because of none other than And Just Like That, Sex in the City. And this is what this, I don't even know what this episode is going to be called. It's probably going to be called And Just Like That, Big Fucking Died and I'm Pissed Off. And so, spoiler alert for anybody already here and you've been watching, you like Sex in the City and you didn't know it, you'll know in the big, big spoiler and the big plot line of this reboot is that none other than Big died. And when I watched it, started the first episode in hope of, oh my god, amazing, so excited, the gals are back together minus Samantha, we're gonna have, I don't know, a whole season of just them in their elder years living it up in New York City, and you're telling me at the end of episode fucking one that Big died. Well, the way I thought a piece of me died inside. So I, being me, the dramatics that I am, took to the Grief Gang Instagram stories and just went, literally, what the fuck, guys? Are there any Sex in the City fans and Just Like That fans out there who have watched this and are as just flabbergasted as me? And the response was insane. It was absolutely insane. Like, I was going through my DMs for days on after having conversation with people, and most specifically with a friend of mine who has so wonderfully joined me today, because we thought, fuck it, there's so much in it in these, just these four episodes, most specifically the first and the second, that is, it is, he's died, and so they can't just override that. There's a lot of grief on camera and on such a major platform such as Sex in the City reboot. I don't think we ever thought we would see something a topic like this be this front and center of a show like this. So I'd like to introduce to you my guest for this episode to talk all things Sex and the City and just about grief on the screen. So I'd like to introduce Suyin Haynes.
Babes. What an introduction. This is the exact intersection of my interests. Sex and the City super fan plus all things grief and loss. So it's such a delight to be here for this festive treat. Thank you so much for having me.
But before we absolutely delve into it, because we have got responses from both my audience and Suyin put out some stuff on her stories as well, not only asking what you think about grief being portrayed in And Just Like That, but also as well if there are any other programmes or movies or just kind of television that really speaks to you and depicts grief in its truest form. And as probably always, you know, this is not any, you know, yes, they've done it right. That's absolutely, it's opinion only, and we're all allowed our fucking opinions, aren't we? And some people agree that, yes, this is, honestly, Suyin, I have to say this stuff because people, it's my own fucking opinion.
Opinions are mine and my own alone.
And yeah, literally, disclaimer, opinions are mine and mine only. I'm going to throw in a trigger warning in here as well. Just, I've never done a trigger warning before, probably, but because the nature of how this goes and what we will probably go into, mm-hmm. it is quite graphic. Mm-hmm. So trigger warning for kind of like sudden death, sudden bereavement, and it probably goes for us by saying heart attack, because that was, because when I found out it was, I was like, whoa. So yeah, to kickstart, me and Suyin, we're going to just talk a little bit about kind of like our relationship to, well, sort of the feelings that maybe came up for us when watching it. Like I literally just said, when I discovered that it was that Big died of a heart attack, because I, for some reason, thought it was a stroke. I don't know why. I thought it was a stroke.
It did kind of look like that was happening from his sort of movements. But then when you take into account, you know, the history from the show and that he had already had a heart surgery, I think, and heart problems. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I completely.
Some people said they realised when she put on the shoes that morning that he was going to die.
Someone's been watching too many. No, I'm just kidding. I would not have put two and two.
Yeah,
I thought, oh,
some people, nice. Some people putting two and two together and thinking, right, she's putting the shoes on. This is a really poignant moment. This is very much. And then some people picked up, obviously, when the scene was flickering between Charlotte's daughter and then him on the Peloton. I thought it was going to come out he was having an affair. With Allegra. I thought he was having an affair with Allegra. That's what I thought was going to happen. Seeing Carrie stood there in the moment, looking at her husband, literally dying in front of her, took me way back to when I was stood in the A&E, in the red department, which was like the critical, and looking at my mum all wired up, and I was like, oh, and then almost like the outer body experience. And then like, almost like you just come back in like Carrie did. She just stared at him for a bit and we're all like screaming at the telly, like, fucking call 911, call 911.
She fully freezes.
And she absolutely freezes. And it's all well and good for us to say, you know, there's a whole debate, isn't there? Could she have called 911?
What did a whole article about it? Somebody like a cardiologist and was like, is it Carrie's fault Big died? And the cardiologist was like, yeah. And I was like, excuse me. I mean, come on. Seriously, come on. Like, this is, you know, this is a woman who's the love of her life is dying in front of her eyes. Yeah. It's like, you know, I was like, I think we're focusing on like the wrong aspect.
But yeah, for me, it did bring up quite a few things for me and take me back a little bit. So I just kind of wanted to ask you, Suyin, as well as experiencing a sudden death yourself, kind of how did it feel for you? Did you have any inkling that you think he was going to die?
Okay, well, basically.
Did you get a tip off?
So I had planned to watch it with a few friends from work, but none of us were free until the Sunday. This is very boring, but none of us were free until the Sunday. And then obviously it came out on the Thursday. So I was trying to avoid all spoilers. But obviously, like, being online, I could see, I kind of knew from like the hints of people saying it. So I kind of knew it was coming. I will say, just a kind of broader point about And Just Like That, there is so much to get into, and I'm not sure all of it is entirely working for me in terms of you know, some of the sort of you know, approaches to race and gender and things that feel a bit like shoehorned in. But I feel like that's putting all of that to aside, because I think we just want to focus on grief, which I think, for what it's worth, is doing it, is portraying it really kind of quite well in some in many ways, and for me. But just, I guess, just a bit about my story. So my brother Jonathan died suddenly when I was 5 years old and he was 20 years old. But that happened extremely suddenly. I wasn't there. And there's very little of that time that I can remember. But something that's been, that was so sort of triggering for me over the last year and a half, and actually how we got to know each other, nearly 2 years now, how we got to know each other is because my uncle died at the very start of the pandemic in the UK in March 2020. And that was so sudden. It was like a complete shock. Yes, he was in his 80s, but, you know, I did, you know, this was when we didn't even really know what COVID was. And that for me brought back so many feelings that had been like unresolved from my childhood and that loss of Jonathan. And then so you and I met through doing going to the New Normal there. So out to Jack and Ben. and then through just, you know, following your page and being part of your community. And I've been, you know, so grateful for that. So I guess, you know, my experience of grief has been quite, you know, I wasn't there for it in the sense that for the death in the sense that Carrie was, but I can certainly relate to those feelings of like shock. And I think like when I first watched it, on my first watch, I felt quite skeptical of some of the characters and I don't think I really had like the full buy-in. But today when I watched it back, I was like, God, this is actually heartbreaking. And in this scene, in this moment, you can absolutely feel her pain. Like she does this, she screams his name, she screams John, and I'm just like, oh, my heart, you know, it's painful. And, you know, it's at that point when there's, you know, nothing that you can do.
When you look back, obviously, as well, like the whole six series of Sex and the City, the whole thing was her chasing Big and then to her to just now lose him. It is like, even for us, we're like, well, who is Carrie without Big, or chasing Big, or losing him and getting him back again? And the whole what do I do now? And then Miranda going into, oh, well, we, you know, funeral, things like stuff like that, and post-mortem, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, like, what do I do now? Yeah, so that's episode. What else? More in episode one. It was just chaotic.
Yeah, I think like when she's preparing that scene with the freezer as well. I think it was like it was written in like a bit of an awkward way, because when I first watched that, I was a bit like, huh? but I think the interpretation is right that she is in that daze, and I think that is so relatable. Like when you have something so, you know, the most traumatic thing imaginable. Yeah. That's like, you know, a lot has happened in episode one, and I feel like in episode two as well. I think those two are really like, you know, episode two is the funeral, and and I think it's also, I mean, maybe we can talk a bit about how they sort of use different characters as like vehicles for different responses to grief. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about that. So, okay, you take one and I'll take the other. You go. Okay. So
Who do you want to take?
I'm going to take Charlotte, because the responses that I had to Charlotte was very 50-50.
Okay, I want to.
Okay, I'll take Charlotte. So for those, again, I'm going to talk because of like someone who's listening to this has never watched Sex and the City in their life. So yeah, in Sex and the City, there is Carrie, there's Charlotte, there's Miranda and Samantha. But Samantha, because there was tea in real life, drama in real life, Samantha didn't come back. So it's Carrie, Carrie, Charlotte, Miranda. They're like the threesome, the gals, the trio. They're all very, very different. But yeah, as Suyin just said, it almost as if like that, the writers of it are now, categorizing the now three characters, or now the only two, for your different responses and reactions to grief. Henceforth, Charlotte has always kind of been a little bit the mother hen of the group. The mother hen, she's very prude, isn't she? She's very ladylike, she's very traditional, blah, blah, blah. Adore her, gorgeous, like love her and Harry and the girls.
Exactly. What do you think of down the road?
I know. In a beautiful apartment looking over fucking Central Park.
I saw it for some.
All the babes. Stunning. And Charlotte's response. Her story is interesting because Charlotte's carrying some guilt in this because, for example, Carrie went to a recital of Charlotte's daughter's piano thing, and as she was there, Big was having the heart attack. So Charlotte's carrying this kind of guilt of, if I didn't ask you to come or make you come, you would have been there and saved him, blah, 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 blah. Push that aside, though, there's other emotions and reactions that Charlotte's doing where Charlotte, whenever she is around Carrie, she's the one who kind of can't keep it together. She is the one who is blubbering. When a couple of days after he dies, Carrie and her go to visit this funeral parlor, and it's very like American tradition, like funeral directors. And Carrie's very stoic in it. She's very like, you can just see she's in that daze still. And I saw myself so much in that of just, I remember going to the funeral parlor and being very, almost turning my nose up a little bit at it and just being like, yeah, get it fucking done and whatever. And keeping it very much together. Like I never cried in the funeral parlor at once. And as they're doing and walking around and looking through the booklets and pamphlets, Charlotte is just a blubbering mess. And Charlotte is Carrie's best friend, quote unquote, you know, her rock and her shoulder to cry on. And Charlotte can't keep her shit together, bless her. And then the lady, the funeral director, comes in and she immediately addresses Charlotte, thinking, well, of course, the woman who is crying is obviously the widow. And she approaches her and she says, Miss Preston, I'm so sorry for your loss. And Carrie goes, it's me. And it was in that moment, it was so telling. And I think really great they did that, because it is how, just by assumption, by who is just outwardly expressing, she must be the widow because she's crying. And then as throughout the series and through the episodes, you begin to see kind of Carrie not really relying on Charlotte as much. And I kind of felt two ways about it. Like I whether I'm biased because I love Charlotte too, but in terms of, I totally understood why Carrie didn't really call upon her and would call upon Stanford instead in that scene. Love that one. And but then Charlotte taking it very much to heart. But I was a bit like, oh, Charlotte, like, remove your ego from this a bit.
Yeah.
Remove your ego from this. Like, I know that might hurt. And I was trying to think about it in scenarios, even in my life, maybe potentially where I might even thought I would have been somebody's go-to to cry on, and I've not been. But you have to remove yourself. And it really made me think about, I don't know why this weird example came to my mind of when, you say, I remember it quite a few times when my mum died, of like people would message and be, say such, you know, you don't have to reply. You don't have to reply, like, don't worry. And I knew with some people, they actually meant that, and they wouldn't care if I did reply or not. But with some people, I knew if I didn't reply, it would be very personal to them. And I felt like Charlotte is a bit like that character. She'd be like, whatever you need, like, I'm here, but don't feel pressure. But if you didn't use that resource and you didn't call upon her, you didn't respond to her, she'd think, you don't think I'm a good support network. But and then, so yeah, some of my DMs were very interesting. I think there was, I'll get to one later, but one where did go along the lines of like, Charlotte needs to pull her fucking shit together.
Yeah, well, Carrie literally says that. She's like, get it together and let's go. Like, get it fucking together. No, I completely, and I think, well, Kristen Davis, who's the actress who plays Charlotte, she is acting in that funeral parlor scene. To an extent, it's maybe I found it a little bit distracting. But then I also think that is realistic. Like you say, there are people who are, for all the, you know, goodwill in the world and all of the positive intentions, don't quite know what to do or how to behave in a way that doesn't center them. And like, that's not said with, you know, any shade, but it is like there's definitely scenarios that I can think of where it becomes about you, as in the person who's experienced the loss, then are making the other person feel better and are comforting the other person who hasn't experienced that loss necessarily. And that can be tricky. And it is like the, you know, don't worry if you don't reply thing, and then taking it sort of personally. I think there are some very touchy moments between Charlotte and Carrie. There was one moment at the funeral. Charlotte just leans into her when they're watching the montage of his life on the screen. And she's like, "You okay?" And she says, "Yeah." And I think those quieter moments are so sort of delicate.
But yeah, second ep was funeral.
Yeah.
And that was the most chicest funeral I've ever seen in my life.
I know. We love those lesbians who it's kind of inexplicable, like, who they are. But, I mean, love them anyway.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah, it looked like it was at some kind of art gallery, didn't it? And I guess
it was an art gallery, yeah.
I guess also here we can talk, like, super briefly about, you know, I kind of riffing off what you were saying about Charlotte, who blames herself because she had... Yeah. She had pressured Carrie to, you know, been a bit forceful in asking Carrie to come to this recital. And she, you know, verbalises that she blamed herself. And then when they were all getting ready for the funeral, Steve, Miranda's husband, it's clear that he blames the Peloton. He's like, why did he even have it? You know, all this stuff. And then Carrie, when, you know, she's in the hallway with Charlotte, and she's like, "I just wanted to go on. I wanted to drive out to the beach on Wednesday. Like, I wanted to." And she has this like quite kind of like almost scream. It's quite painful to watch, but in like, you know, really, I think it's quite a powerful moment. Yeah. I think it's like, you know, they all sort of blame different things, and I guess it's a way to try and rationalize, you know, what's happened. A slight tangent there, but I think, you know,
it's very important though, and how all of the characters are, although it's, you know, it's playing, so he had a heart attack,
and it's not, he had a heart attack. No one can, it's control, you can't control, prevent, predict.
But to touch in the funeral, one of the best parts that I liked, and I did not expect it at all, and I thought that is really good they put that in, because you know what it was? It was like an anchor. It brought me back down right into boom reality. In the funeral, one of Big's ex, I would say ex, she's not really an ex. She was just like a flame. She was like an old ting on the side. So she sat there. So there's quite a few, I think, people who had come from Big's previous like love lives and stuff like that. And, you know, the beautiful presentation, or, you know, like eulogies, was displaying its photos and collages of Big and throughout his lifetime. And everyone's looking at it longingly and tears and stuff. And then this woman, Susan, she goes, "Are we just going to forget how much of a prick he was to her?"
Yeah.
And like looks around the room, and you're there watching it like, oh, and it's beautiful music playing. And then you're like, oh, and you're almost like, of course, you're aghast. You're like, oh my God, like who the fuck would say that at a funeral? But then you go, well, actually, he was a fucking asshole to her. And it's so true. And it's not to be like, you know, spit on his grave, but like to go that. And it honestly anchored me so much. And then some of the responses I got in my DMs of like, we are so quick. Well, it's just natural. When somebody dies, we're not really, we don't sit and think about the horrible things and the flaws that they had. We also think, and we just like, shit, they've died. Mm-hmm. But you can sit back after a while, and I've definitely had times in my life, I think, yeah, there's some things about her that I really didn't like. Yeah. And she wasn't nice in that moment or whatever. But in the moment in the funeral, and she went, he was an arsehole to her. And actually you think, oh my God, yeah, he really wasn't sometimes that nice where he treated her. And then they left her at the altar.
Yeah.
Like,
so rude.
So fucking rude.
No, you're so right. So, Susan, I can't remember. All I remember about it's not all I remember. The main thing I remember about the episode that she's in is that she runs like a cashmere company or something. She's like friends with Carrie, and her husband's really horrible. And then Carrie tells her, they have a fight, and then Carrie tells her to divorce her husband. And then she ends up getting back with him, and then it's like really awkward or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Listen, I called myself a super fan at the beginning, and I'm sure you'll have people to correct me for, like, this girl is a charlatan. But I think You're so right. And I think, you know, it's something that comes up in It's Complicated as well, which is another TNN group, because it can be really hard to verbalize things that were not amazing and the best and, you know, so brilliant and wonderful about the person that you've lost. Like it can be hard to say that without feeling like an incredible sense of guilt.
Yeah.
So I agree. I thought it was super clever that they bring Susan in as just this sort of like cheeky cameo to be like, wait, but guys, remember that we had like whole fucking six series of him like messing her around.
Yeah.
And film.
Literally. Yeah. And it's also like we're going to just forget all of that. And then now they've just got their beautiful apartment and their, you know, active like child-free life. They're childless, not child-free because they chose not to. Life. And then it's just like, oh, but we forget, he literally was a raging piece of shit to her. And that, but in death, you are just evaded of all your flaws. And not everybody every time, because obviously there are some evil people, but more than most, you do get almost like a get out of jail card of, well, I died. And it was an unfortunate death too. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that sets up, Now that you're talking about it, I'm thinking about it more. That kind of sets up the next episode, which is episode 3, where they read out Big's will, and then he's given $1 million to Natasha, who was his ex-wife. And it's so unexplained. And then that has Carrie completely spiraling. And I was like, girl, I relate, because I would be exactly the same.
$1 million, not even like a little young 1,000 or 100,000. I mean, $1 million.
Doesn't she say like, if it had been $10, I'd still be like,
And it's so true.
Yeah, yeah. And I think like in that way, Natasha is, that whole little plot line is kind of Carrie searching for answers to the unexplained, because there is so much that's unexplained about death, and especially sudden death as well. And I think, you know, that little flicker from Susan Sharon at the funeral is maybe like a little foreshadowing of what's to come in the next episode, that, you know, it wasn't all roses.
No, and that he did, kind of live this, say, hidden life. But yeah, that was an absolute curveball. Ep 4, so it literally kind of, you kind of catapulted into Carrie's now selling the apartment. She's selling the apartment, she's packing up, she's always kept her previous apartment before, like the notorious apartment that, you know, we know through all the series, which I love. And even in a way with that, you know, as much as I agree with it, it's almost like, does she always think they were never going to last?
I kind of read it as like, she always wanted her own space.
Yeah, that's, I see both sides. Absolutely. I was like,
but I can
get, if I had the means, I'd be like, absolutely. Have the means.
Dropping them all here and there.
We'd all have our own apartments, say, piss off, like I'm going elsewhere. But I just always thought, oh, I wonder what, it starts off, Carrie wakes up in her old apartment, and then she's talking to the girls and she's like, I'm selling the apartment, I've got a realtor, whatever this is and that. We then meet this new realtor, and she is this glamorous woman who is like walking around the apartment and is like, beautiful, but it's got to go. And it's, you know, because, you know, selling a home, I guess if anyone in property or a sold a home, you know, you have to envision that this, you would live here. It can't be kind of plastered in, your personal memories and your personal taste, well, no matter how gorgeous it might be. But all that stuff obviously in their home is stuff that her and Big have chosen and created this beautiful home together. So this woman called Seema, who comes in, is like, gorgeous, but it's gotta go. So they get in a stager who comes and stages it, and it's all
Selling Sunset.
Babe, I'm watching Selling Sunset, Selling Town Pass, Selling everything. I love it.
Sorry, interruption. I was like, the way I was watching it too, and I was like, I know that that's been staged. They've got, you know, like, feeling like smug, like I know.
You can now know when a place is staged. You're like, this is too perfect, pristine to be lived in. Yeah. And then they start kind of doing more like lunch dates and talking about potential buyers and stuff, this and that. And you start to see a friendship start blossoming. And there is a scene, the car scene, where what happened before it that made Carrie?
The car scene is when is with the cigarette.
And then, the cigarette, yeah.
So they no,
actually, but Carrie was in like a weird mood. Something had happened before.
No, so first of all, they're like at lunch and they're talking about like dating apps and like Seema's on a dating app or whatever. And basically Seema's like, girl, it's fucking hard out here. Like all men are awful on these apps.
Yeah.
And Carrie says, oh, well, it's good you're still getting out there. Cause I guess Seema's meant to be like
putting yourself out there.
Cause I guess they're all meant to be in like their early 50s.
And she kind of twinges, doesn't she?
Yeah, exactly. And then they go to the old apartment where Seema, after that, Seema's like sorting some paperwork out. And then they had like an open house. So people coming around to see it, staged, and if they want to buy it. And then Seema's like, oh, there was an accident with this photograph. And she's like, I knocked it over because like you're not really meant to have personal items out. But, you know, like it's okay. We can just replace the frame.
Yep, just the glass.
And it's like a photo of Carrie and Big and the glass is smashed. And then the bit in the car is when they have the cigarette moment. Maybe we can talk about the photograph first and then go.
Yeah. Was this as the cigarette was after?
I think so. God, I only watched it today as well. But I'm like,
Damn.
How did I not know that?
No, I feel like the cigarette was before.
Okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Right, maybe the cigarette. Should we do the cigarette
because the cigarette was kind of like a bonding moment, and then it was like argument.
Yeah,
and then it was like, okay, we're good. And they ate sushi, and like that was it.
Oh yeah, you're right.
So yeah, but back on the photo. So while we're still in this one, so Carrie, she's like, yeah, I'm really sorry. I accidentally cracked the photo of you and Big, and she's like, well, you know, the photo, it's not damaged. It's just the glass. We'll replace the glass. And Carrie just flies off the handle and she's like, but this was on his side of the bed. He touched it. It's really the last thing, like, you know, what if he touched? You don't understand. It's not just a piece of glass. You can't just replace it regardless of the photo. And just really starts flying off the handle. And Seema said, she turned and she's like, I'm really sorry. Like, I am really sorry. And Carrie's like, well, you don't seem it. And it was just very, it was very hostile. Yeah. And it was kind of like, where's this going to go? Is it going to just be like Carrie storming out? Is it going to be this? And like Seema like stood up to the plate.
Yeah.
And she was like, and then also in a way though, in that moment, I kind of thought, has she just like scapegoated out of, cause she's not of responsibility, because she did. She held her hands and she went, like, yeah, I might not seem. She turned around and she went, I might not be as sympathetic to your situation. And because you know, such as like when you, like you the other day. And Carrie's like, what? And she refers back to when Carrie said, when you said the remark of, you know, you're still, that's great, you're still putting yourself out there. And almost as if like she should be kind of washed up and shouldn't be doing it. And then I thought that was the only point she was kind of going to make. But then when she went on to say, you know, how does she lead into it soon?
Because I can't remember.
She was like,
but she's, it was basically making the point that like maybe a little part of me doesn't feel that sorry for you, because at least you got to have the love that I've been looking for like my whole life.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
It was very profound.
Which was like, I was like, oh boy.
Yeah, that really hit me, because I thought for her to, well, whoever wrote that in, I thought that's ballsy to sit here and say to a fresh widow and to say, you know, actually, it's probably a bit of me that I actually don't really feel that sympathetic towards you, because you know what? Your broken heart is the evidence of one of the truest and most wonderful loves that you've had, and I've not ever had an inkling of that.
I think there's so many things about that scene with Seema, who is fucking fab, and we just both were fangirling. But that thing with the photograph, and I think Harry says, like, he touched that glass countless times, he touched it. And I have so had that feeling before where I've like fucking lost my shit over something that was like not even, doesn't seem big to anyone else, but it was huge for me. So for me, I remember it because it was last summer. We were clearing out some old books and things at home, and my brother had this copy of the book, The Railway Children, from when he was a kid. And we live opposite a pub, and they were doing like a book, like a free library kind of thing. So you could get the books off and people would exchange them. And my dad dropped off The Railway Children book.
Yeah.
And I'd had it on my shelf. And then I just said to my mum, like, where is that book? And then she was like, well, your dad's gone and dropped it off today. And I was like, no. I was like, no. And I was like, I'm not going to read it. But just to know that he had touched it and it had his, like, this belongs to Jonathan in the front. Just to know that he had had that in his hands, I was like, oh, my God, no. Like, that is so, it might seem like, you know, freebie or junk to someone else, but that is so, like, priceless to me. And I think only people who have experienced that kind of profound loss will understand that no matter how trivial something seems. And like, I kind of, you know, I get Seema's point insofar as like, what's the big deal? It's a photo, you can, you know, replace the frame. It's not that deep.
Yeah.
But, you know, if that is something that has so much significance and you attach so much value to it, I was like, oh my God, Carrie, girl, I'm with you.
I'm absolutely with you. It was just then Carrie, you know, someone's like, she doesn't ever finish like a sentence, like gets it out, and you're like, just spit it out. Get it out.
It was,
oh, it's just my dear.
The kind of the rage. I think it's SJP.
It's
doing such a good job at that, because, like, you know, moving through those different stages, I think you can see see that quite well. But I agree. And I think, like, you know, with Seema's, like, sort of, well, you said this, I think it can be read as a bit like whataboutery. But I think, as we were talking, you know, we were chatting about it briefly earlier, I think Seema is like the most, you know, and credit to another Sex and City podcast. So I got to thinking, because they were talking about this earlier today.
Yeah.
But, you know, she is the most sort of Samantha-like character, I think. And I think it's interesting that, you know, she's someone who's new and fresh, didn't know Big, only knows Carrie as Carrie is now, and can challenge her in that way.
And can
step up to the plate in that way and be like, not pandering, to use the word that you used earlier, sort of being the comfort that, you know, Charlotte or Miranda maybe had given her.
She's got the balls to say, kind of like, what the fuck are you playing at? And I'm really intrigued to see where this friendship goes, because I can think of like a handful of occasions when friends in my life, where ones, especially when you are like with the rage that Carrie is playing so well in the grief of being like a ticking time bomb, and you can see in Miranda and Charlotte really stepping on eggshells around her and just trying to make everything, like, even, there was a scene, wasn't it, where Charlotte was trying to choose a place for lunch, and she was trying to choose a place, and she was like, it was really hard to find a table for three where they hadn't been before, like that, and just things like that. And it's like, she's gonna have to eat some, you know, like they've probably eaten in so many places that she doesn't even realize they've probably even eaten there. Like, the guy was minted, he probably took her everywhere, like, he took her everywhere. So, like, Charlotte, babe, give it up. Whereas Seema's kind of like, and to go to the scene with the cigarette, of just, she's just kind of the friend who just be like, you want to forget about your worries and you just want to fucking go wild. You just want to have a couple of your vices. I'm your girl, like, I'm your good time girl. It really reminds me of one of my friends who just, as much as we can speak about the deep and heavy stuff, if I just go, babe, fuck it, let's just go in a fucking wild one. And especially back then, and just smoke far too many cigarettes ourselves and drink far too many bottles of wine. But there's a scene with Carrie, and if you've watched Sex and the City, the series, Carrie was a vehement, very big smoker. And that was part of her identity, yeah. Essentially. She'd sit at her laptop and smoke a cigarette and be like, and so I got to thinking.
Fabulous question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tag popping out her mouth.
Literally, like how her walls in her flat were not yellow, I don't know.
My hope for all of these sort of characters is that these new characters get like lives of their own that are like not fully, so they become like more fully formed characters and, you know, like maybe we do learn a bit more about Seema's past and her history and like what has informed her personality. I think that would be super interesting. I'm definitely like intrigued to learn more about her.
Same, definitely. And I think for its longevity of the show, I think they kind of need to.
Yeah.
They need to bring in some, fresh characters. Yes. But now for the DMs. So I've got, how many have I got? I took a few from the previous DMs weeks ago and a few from recent ones because it's interesting. So, right, to get in. So somebody says, hi, DMing my response because the box isn't big enough. Brackets, no. But then listen, no pun intended. Like for the box. I was like...
she
goes, R.E. Carrie's grief, in my humble opinion, her grief is evident in up to two episodes, ep 2 and 3, and is overshadowed / downplayed from the fourth episode. Interesting because it mirrors society's notion of grief having an expiration date and people not giving a fuck after a certain time frame. Mm-hmm. I guess the grief expiration date for this series was 2 episodes. And then also, I'd like to grieve more like Carrie. She looks so put together in her grief and is able to semi-function. I can barely focus on a task for more than 2 seconds and wear the same clothes 3 to 4 days. It's probably portraying grief in a completely non-realistic, filtered fashion, but I suppose that's another topic for another day. Mm. So much more to say on this, but I'll probably leave it here. And just like that, she went to bed emotionally unstable.
Oh, much love to that person. My God. If it helps, I'm wearing the same outfit, like the same 3 outfits, like now. I think that's. I think it's everyone's got to do them at this stage of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think those are really interesting points. I think it's hard because I'm kind of like, I don't fully know if the show's creators found their way with it all yet, so maybe that kind of overshadowing of Carrie's grief plot line, like we said, there wasn't really that much to say in episode 3 that I can think of unless we're missing something big.
But I am hearing storylines of that potentially is going to end with her, like there's been things of her like potentially with somebody new by the end of the season. And that sounds, me seeing saying that out loud already is me kind of passing my own judgment. Actually, it's probably my own bias of thinking, obviously I don't know the time frames that we're working with. They could be like 2 years later. But the fact of so in the beginning it's going to be, if this is to how it plans out, the love of her literal life dies, and then the end, who knows where the course of it is going to go.
And I think it's I don't know, they've only got, what we're on 4 now, so it's like, they've got 10 episodes in total. So I guess they're also thinking like, shit, we've got like, introduced a lot of new characters, we've got like a lot
And give them airtime, give them bloody airtime.
But I think, I think that's interesting. I think that point about perceptions of grief is super interesting as well, and kind of feeds back into the point that you made about Charlotte being mistaken for the Mrs. Preston at the funeral parlour. And the ways in which we think of people who are grieving. And the fashion thing, totally agree.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, it's just the outfit's impeccable. I know. Sometimes.
Even when she's asleep, when she went to bed on the
side. No.
I was like, that's a cute little like cardigan and top that could.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And that navy dressing gown she's got, silk one. I'm like, fuck, like they need to get, I need to find the page that has like all the outfits. There is a page, isn't there?
Yes, I think.
I need to find it.
Yeah, I'll send you a box.
Thank you, because I need that dressing gown. I need bad. Someone replied to one of my stories where I said the scene where she says, what do I do now and how it upset me? So he put, agreed. I held it together until she said, what do I do now? Then I was gone. I thought they did Charlotte a bit dirty though. When Miranda's mother died, she was the woman holding everything together.
Yeah.
Also found it slightly weird when they showed her explaining death to her kids. Jews love talking about death. So I enjoyed this person is Jewish themselves. This would not be their first talk on the subject. SJP is very good at showing how her world has crumbled only through her eyes. She broke me.
Oh, that's really true. That's a really good analysis. Yeah. I was actually, you know, when we're talking a bit later, I know this, I'm aware this has been like it's going to be like a bumper episode. But you know, part of our plan was to talk about, you know, different representations of grief.
Yeah.
And you know, that episode, My Motherboard Myself, which is the one in which Miranda's mother dies in the series, is one of my favorite episodes of Sex and the City ever.
Yeah.
Because again, all three of Carrie, Samantha and Charlotte are all sort of different vehicles for those different categories of friend that you have during the grief stage. And yeah, I think that does make sense. Like that in that incident, Charlotte took on the role of organizer. And I guess she was also, done a bit dirty here. I also feel like she was kind of played for laughs in both, because like Charlotte orders these flowers that she thinks are going to be super tasteful for Miranda's mother's memorial, and they come and they're like so tacky and like fucking huge and just awful, and she's like, oh my god, no. And then I kind of feel like, you know, that's intended to make us like laugh a bit. And I kind of feel like in the funeral parlor, I know it's, you're not menu, but I kind of found Kristen overacting a bit much. But yeah, I think that was a really good like analysis, and interesting to hear it from that perspective as well about you know, how different cultures talk about death.
Lovely. Okay, so the next DM that I received, which I found quite interesting, it went, so they were responding to my message of if I thought, is it being depicted well? Is grief being depicted well in the show? And they put, I think right now they are representing it okay, but honestly, I feel like they are going to glaze over it for the rest of the season. The previews hinted at her already dating again. I feel like they just killed him off because she's so happy, then there wouldn't be content for the show, which I thought was very telling. And almost like, do we just revel in the suffering of Carrie? Her being single again, moving back to her original apartment, it's all for the views. So I thought, interesting that, yeah, is it just all for the views? And do we just want to see Carrie single? Like, is Carrie's character just better off like being single and gallivanting? Like, do we have to go to the extremity of killing him off? Like,
no, that's very interesting. Yeah, because I do think in the series she actually is her most interesting when she's single. Like, I think the most interesting episodes are when she's being single and just like a bit ridiculous and just like walking around New York City in ridiculous shoes. But I guess, you know, talking about it all being for the views, I guess if we take like a real sort of hard look at it, then probably yes, you know, the writers are going, they're going to be wanting to write a compelling story. But I also kind of feel like, sort of what would be if we didn't have this huge pivotal moment, the series doesn't really have like a reason to exist necessarily. I think it is interesting to see them moving through this stage of their lives and to see Carrie coping with this at this stage of her life. What do you think?
It is interesting. It's kind of like, you know, you do have to factor in of like, it is a show and it's not been on air for what, like 10 to 15 years, and it has to come out with a bang. And we do just have to navigate through these these ladies, they aren't, yeah, like, you know, through the series, the whole depiction of them is like they are not like your everyday woman, but of certain women, and that they're not immune to these type of things. Interestingly, though, Suyin as well put a call out on her stories to see if, okay, if Sex and the City, or if you haven't watched And Just Like That, depicted grief really well for you, what kind of shows, programs or films that did or do? And you got a really nice response, didn't you? There were some ones in there that I thought, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with like two in a bit more detail that came to mind for me, and that like, I posted one of them and got like quite a lot of replies to it that were like, oh my God, yes, this one. And then there was another one that I had been thinking of. And then somebody else had like replied to it and brought brought it up in their replies. But the first one is Never Have I Ever. It's a Netflix series by Mindy Kaling, who did The Mindy Project. And it's, I didn't watch it for ages because I thought it was like, I didn't really know if it was like my cup of tea. It was like a teen comedy, you know, quite short episodes, and doesn't really seem like it's a show about grief on the face of it. But it's basically about a teenager called Davy, and her father dies suddenly in a really like traumatic and awful way. That's sort of the prelude to the series. And you know, the series is about her sort of moving through high school. But it's also about, you know, how her relationship with her mother really changes, and how like her grief because of what happened to her father is really unprocessed and manifests in so many ways that are like very messy and, you know, kind of manifests as a way to like, you know, she wants to try and control, you know, which boy she has a relationship with, or get boy to like her, or she wants to control like what her friends are doing, and this kind of thing. And like the kids at school, I watched it a little while ago, so the details are a bit hazy, but I think the kids at the school even start calling her like Crazy Davy. And like, because they're like, you're acting so crazy, Davy. I was like, no, babe, she's just grieving. God, give her a break. And I thought it was really interesting because it also kind of, I've read some like articles about it, and because she's from like a South Asian American family, it also touches on like the cultural aspects of grief and like handling emotions and those sorts of difficult feelings. In different, you know, environments. And I just thought it was really interesting, like, because her mother also bottles up the feeling. And then it kind of it's interesting to see how that's like replicated in her. So that was one, and then that got quite a lot of responses. Have you watched it, Amber?
I've not, no, but I have heard. I've heard it through Abby, you know, my friend Abby. She's watched it, and I have heard things, but I think I'd want to watch it, but as soon as I know full well like it's about grief, it's almost like I go, oh God, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it sounds like one where you might have to be in a certain mind frame.
Yeah. I think it does quite a good job at mixing like the light and the like darker stuff, because you know, it is ultimately about like the overarching thing is about in the first series at least, is about her moving through this grief. But she's also like a kid getting up to like hijinks and like in love triangle and things, but I totally get that you need to be in like the right headspace to sort of see those things.
I don't know which ones for me kind of programs I think have done it right that are, or even that weren't dedicated to it. I think obviously I think Afterlife is one of the most fantastic, and I would love one day to have Ricky Gervais on this show to just ask him, how on earth have you encapsulated this person so well, given that he's not lost, don't know that, but been widowed, and to step into that role so fantastically, like whoever he might have studied or spent time with to really understand the role and the nuances of what it's like to be a widow, like hats off, because it is one of the most beautifully painful series that just get it right.
The second one that like had come to mind for me, just thinking about, you know, it in broader terms, and had also come up in a response from a really dear friend, was The Farewell. I don't know if you've seen this one, Amber. It's a film, and it's got Awkwafina in it, and it's not really about like loss. It's more like anticipatory grief. Okay. So the main character is called Billy, and she's a young Chinese woman who's been second generation in the US, and all of her family, I think most of her family, live in mainland China. Mm. And they find out that the grandmother has the grandmother is diagnosed with a terminal cancer. Mm. And they decide, instead of telling the grandmother, which you would think, you know, coming from the cultures that we come from would be like, you know, obviously the grandmother would know. Yeah. But actually the doctor, I think the doctor lies to her or something, but the family essentially the family cover up the diagnosis. Yeah. And they sort of put on this it's a real wedding, but it's kind of like an excuse for they marry one of the cousins off and use that as an excuse to like have a big party. they kind of encourage the cousin and his girlfriend to get married earlier and have a big party in China so that they can get everyone together. Yeah. And it's really like a last goodbye for the grandmother, but she doesn't actually know it. And then so it's all about this main character, Billy, like not really understand, like, you know, being like, what the fuck? This is so crazy. Like, why would you do this? Like, this is really, you know, against her rights. But then also understanding that, like, you know, in that culture, like that's seen as the kind of thing to do. And more sort of, you know, respectful / like giving her more dignity and also like a way to get everyone together.
Yeah, because for some people that absolutely might seem unethical and wrong. I think how would you not somebody give someone the agency over their body to know that they're ill and stuff like that? But and that's one of the really important things that I've learned in kind of like my death doula work, is that factoring in cultural and religious and spiritual beliefs and everything of that, you have to leave your bias at the door. Of whatever you think, and especially in like death, dying and bereavement, of how one culture expresses or handles mourns, even might not speak to you and yours, but it's not for you to say what's right and what's wrong, really, or to dictate and to say you shouldn't do that. Or, you know, you can say like, not for me, but absolutely respect that is for you.
So there's some others that I sort of received when I just put out on my stories and I shared them today, were BoJack Horseman, which I've actually heard before. That like one, there's like one episode in particular that's really good, but I am blanking on which one it is. And then also Modern Love came up twice. There's an episode with Minnie Driver, apparently, which is good. I haven't seen that one either, but I do love Modern Love, so maybe I should check that one out. And then also This Is Us, which I've never actually watched, but I've heard I hear loads about it as well, And then Mamma Mia 2 was also one.
Oh my God.
Which I didn't immediately think of, but is actually like very on the money.
But Mamma Mia 2, I'll never forget, me and my best friend, we went to go see it. Oh my God. So that came out, when did that come out, Mamma Mia 2? I think like maybe 2017, I think it came out, 2018. Not long after my mama died. And
2018.
My best friend's 2018, yeah. So for me, that's 2 years after mum. And we'd gone to the cinema to watch it. And yeah, her mum had died. Her mum had died, has died quite a few years before. She's nearing on like 14 years. And we sat there and then just straight away, she's died. And we were like dead mum club here. Like, what the fuck? Like, what? And then
see if you're good.
Honestly, yeah, literally, I looked at her and I was like, and she was like, I didn't know. And I was like, oh. And then, have you watched it? And the scene with the My Love, My Life.
It was such a long time ago. I can't really remember the details.
There's one song in it, and it's at the end when the daughter has the baby. She has the baby, and this child's christening, and she goes up back to the mountaintop from Mamma Mia, the first one, and where she got married and her mum was there and stuff. And there's a song and it's called My Love, My Life. and it is the most beautiful. I'll get to it now because it's the most beautiful song, and it's I think it is it's a love song, but it is the most beautiful song you can imagine for like a parent to a child, and you listen to it and you think, oh my god, yeah, my love, my life, and it's, oh, it's beautiful. And I remember just bawling in the cinema, like, and even now we can't listen to it, we're like, no, I can't do that song. But I think, yeah, that was amazing. I think we'll wrap it up there. But thank you guys for listening and for coming here today.
Yeah, to listening to us bang on about Sex and the City. And I've been saying that for quite a while.
I love it. I love it though. Like, this is so, it's so in niche of what like Grief Gang is, but like just a bit of fun as well and something totally off-piste, which I love. So if you're a Sex and the City fan and you've listened the whole way through, like, hit us up. If you're not a Sex and the City fan and you've sat through this, like, right on to you.
And would be like, I'd love to, it's lovely to hear like people's DMs and like how people have related to it, because I think like I said, I think it was a bit of a shock, you know, for a lot of people, and so to hear the ways that people are responding to it, it's really good.
It is good. Well, thank you so much, Cian, for being my guest today and for talking to my Sex and the City guru.
Thank you for having me. I can't promise my knowledge is completely fact checked, but we try.
There'll be some people in the DMs like, then you said about that season and that series. We're like, okay, babes, all right. Well, Grief Gang, thank you very much. Take care of yourself and keep up with And Just Like That. Bye. Well, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you all enjoyed it and it set your week off to a great start. Whether you've laughed a little, cried a little, I mean, I think crying is good for the soul, or you've resonated with something that was said, thank you for listening and spending time out of your day to do so. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and subscribe. In doing so, you're ensuring that lots more people get to find the Grief Gang podcast and hopefully help them too. If you're not already, check out the Grief Gang on social media platforms such as Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'm most active on the Instagram page, where I love, love, love to connect with you all. For now, take care and big, big love.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.